This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's move over to another case that we have been talking about, and another case that has some interesting writings coming out of it this week. Brian Koberger, Thread said three words, you remember, last year at sentencing. I respectfully decline. Before that, the only words anyone heard from him in the courtroom were yes, no, and guilty. He has been silent for 3.5 years, and then from a segregated cell at the Idaho Maximum Security Penitentiary, he sent a statement to the New York Times through his family. We're going to read that statement here today. There's also the actual filing that he wrote in his serial killer handwriting. That's another piece of writing. It's very similar in nature, but we're going to go through the one that was actually sent through the Times to the Times directly from the Times. Going to read directly from the text that Brian Enten had posted. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work our way through this. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author of The Minds of Mass Killers, is with us, as is Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and chief of the counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Okay, here we go. The words of Koberger. I feel like I should do this on the phone.
Got a little prop here.
Because it just seems like over a year later.
He's on the bat phone.
It is self-evident. I'm just going to read it normally. Over a year later, it is self-evident, because Koberger likes to speak in big words as if he's, you know, oratoring something very important. It is self-evident that in State v. Koberger, justice was not served. Unanswered questions seem to multiply with each piece of discovery unleashed, and the public demands the truth. It's almost kind of like a movie trailer. Unfortunately, the truth shall never be derived from the state's myopic narrative, a work of fiction which has yet to evolve since the PCA was released nearly 4 years ago, and its faulty premises were never challenged at trial. Circumnavigated by a broken plea, the trial never provided the public the clarity conductive to closure, and justice shall remain abjectly miscarried unless that plea is withdrawn. Withdrawn, I tell you! I added that part. I hereby declare my intention to enter a not guilty plea and welcome the state the opportunity to prove their case at trial, as well as to again file for the death penalty. My actual innocence is my truth. And the plea, hinged on by false promises and blatant disinformation, must be withdrawn. Thank you for all who believe in my innocence and continue to critically analyze the case. I send my love to my family, who have never wavered in their belief in who I am, their belief in my innocence. Thank you. Thank you.
Bravo.
Siobhan, what the hell was that?
Yeah. As I've said before, this use of language is how he got into a PhD program, right? Because they like to see applications where people write like that. It's BS thick. It's painful to listen to. On one hand, very comedic, and on another hand, it's like, oh my God, the narcissism here, and the cluelessness that, you know, people are going to believe this at this point. Although apparently there are some people who want to believe it. Just glaring, putting the spotlight back on himself. Mm-hmm. The impression management of what a great person he is and how unfair this whole thing has been, because of course he's innocent. Not really, but you know, mm-hmm. that's what he wants to communicate. And he has too much time on his hands. You know, this is what he sits around thinking about, is how can I craft this perfect, you know,
here. Clarice, I see in the comment, Clarice. Yeah. Robin, your thoughts on little Bry's ramblings?
I feel so inhuman every time I take pleasure in him suffering. And every time I read something from him suffering, I just like rejoice. I did a deeper search on it too, to see what language, because he's a copycat. He's not an original thinker in absolutely anything. And this entire thing, the title of it and a lot of the language from it is derived from the book Broken Plea. Because he is nothing in life but a copycat, subhuman being, again, you know, abhorrent genetic bucket of goo, as we've said. And as Gonsalves continually say as well, because everything he says in there was cut and pasted from something else, all to support his own personal narrative of how he's suffering behind bars. And someone wrote a book that was hearsay because he got it from someone else, didn't do due diligence on anything, and Koberger ordered it from, because it's got to come directly from the publisher, or someone sent it to him, one of his neocons that's like on his side, sent him a copy. He's like, here's my ticket to freedom, and I'm going to cut and paste and claim this as my laurels as to why I got to do this. So you can't even analyze it, because to me, it's just it's a cut and paste conglomeration of stupid goo.
Mm-hmm. Is this, you've obviously, Siobhan, you've analyzed a lot of people in the book, The Mind of Mass Killers. This is what it is, everybody. If you're looking for it on Amazon, highly suggest checking it out. Is this something you think we're going to continue to see out of him every time somebody writes a book that's questioning the case for clicks, basically, or for readers? Because there's going to be more books that are going to come out that are going to go down the conspiracy route. And I'm going to guess everyone he's going to try and latch onto. Is this just the first of many ramblings that we're going to hear out of this guy until somebody finds a broomstick and does what the state of Idaho failed to do?
I think that's a really good guess, because he doesn't have anything else to do other than try and externalize all responsibility and paint himself as a victim.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, he's trying to take control of the narrative. This is his story now. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's going to stick with. And he'll probably, you know, spend the rest of his life trying to do that.
What's your take on, he's arguing in the more formal document that he wrote to the courts, that his confession was coerced, basically. He was pressured into it, essentially, because Ann Taylor told him how icky death row could be and how nasty and spooky and scary and bad it could be. And now he's like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. I think she would kind of maybe overplay that a little bit too negatively. Also saying, my family was there. My family was part of that decision as well. And now it appears he kind of regrets that they were part of that decision, that he listened to Ann Taylor while at the same time thanking them for being supporters of him the whole way through. I mean, it's almost like contradictory in some ways, mm-hmm. with the family involvement. What was your read on that?
Yeah, it also made me think how much of this is trying to please his family.
Yeah.
He is probably desperate for emotional support because he knows 99% of the world hates him. And that may be hard for him to live with. And if his family is truly standing by him and saying that they believe he's innocent at this point, is he performing for them as well, mm-hmm. as these, we'll just say, crazy supporters who are very eager to believe that this is all a conspiracy. And I think also for people like that, it makes them feel important, you know, that they're on his team and this whole thing has been unjust. And that's a really weird mind that goes there, but there are a lot of people with weird minds.
You know, Siobhan, my question is, he didn't have a lot of time, thankfully, to move into the world from mass killer to serial killer, although I think all the workings were there for it. And part of that serial killer mindset with most of them is a fantasization part of it, the fantasy part of it. And I'm curious, do you think that him saying this wasn't the Rose Garden I was promised behind bars, you know, because he thought himself to be, I mean, you can imagine him saying and buying into, I'll plead because, oh, I can be an object of study. I can work with Ramslin and then she can study me and make papers about me and I can still pursue my academic credentials behind bars. And you can see this fantasy going on in his mind because he's got nothing else. Is that what do you think might be going on in the fantasy world, or is it something else?
I think that's a really good guess because, yes, serial killers are driven by fantasy. And I agree that this was the path he was going to take. If he had not been caught, he would have done it again. And fantasy is a huge part of how he copes with the world, you know, being a person with really so little going for him. That this is very important to him now.
And he's got no other currency available to him. He's got nothing. It was all exposed right there in court at the sentencing. Four lives tragically lost, and for all these other sick MFers out there, they always had more to work with because they knew they did more. But him just being an abhorrent bucket of goo, he's got nothing else. And so he's got to grab on to anything he possibly can in that fantasy world. And so I think anytime the world gives him any kind of platform, it's horrendous. But at the same time, I think it makes him suffer more because he's never going to get his way.
He didn't mention the victims at all in the letter. I mean, if you truly did not do this, and you're wanting to find justice, you'd think maybe you'd bring them up of like, I want justice for them too. It would be even more insulting and infuriating if you were to say that. But if that's truly where your heart is at, you might throw that into the letter. What do you think about some of the people who were mentioned in it, and where their head might be at and what their reaction, pure conjecture, might be after getting the text, I'm sure, you know, on a Tuesday, like, hey, look what your little boy did. Like, oh my God. I wonder. I mean, it's one thing if you do believe that he's innocent, and I get it. Some families are going to be there no matter what. They could have a video of him doing it, and some people could be like, oh, I don't think that was him. I have no idea what their thought process is. I'm not trying to insert that, and I'm not trying to say they've done anything wrong or are hiding anything whatsoever. They, in many ways, are victims of Lil Bri as well. But what if they're not on his team, if they're not thinking, yeah, he's just was railroaded here. What should they be doing at this point? Because he's clearly trying to lasso them back into his orbit publicly, whether they seemingly want to be or not. Is this something, you know, as if you were the therapist for a sister, a father, a mother, somebody in this sort of situation, and their child from behind bars does a stunt like this, and they're trying to go, what the hell do I do now? What do you tell them?
Oh, you know, they're still sending him money, right?
Yeah.
Large amounts of money every week, which that is the first thing I would look at. What turns into rescuing and validating something that's ultimately incredibly sick and distorted. And I'm always a believer that reality is the best course. But people tell themselves the stories they need to fall asleep at night. And mm-hmm. I can see it being very possible that they're not wanting to believe it's true. And so, you know, yes, you want to guide people gently into the truth, but that can sometimes take a while. So that would be my approach.
Yeah, Siobhan, I know we've really analyzed Asa Ellerup on this kind of stuff because of her dealing with Rex and her struggles to come to face reality and her therapist who wasn't actually licensed at the time, which is another friggin' amazing story into itself, right? So I know you probably can't answer this, but I'm just curious. I'll ask it anyway. So what would the behaviors of his mother look like if she did accept the truth of what he did?
If she was able to fully accept it, my guess is it would shake her identity. It would shake her world. And that could be a very big collapse for her. And so I can understand that. In one way, as you have said, Robin, you try to put yourself in the position of these people just to have an empathic response and understand. Hard for me to believe that if I had, my kids are so far from being psychopath narcissists, but if I had a child who did something horrendous, hard for me to see that I would be sending them money and doing anything to try to get them out of, you know, the consequences of what they did. But it would break me. It would break me. I think that would be a very, very hard thing to live with.
From what we've seen on those receipts, it's about $150 a week that Mary Koberger has been sending her son, Brian.
A week? Think about that. Yeah. I don't even go out that much. Yeah. I mean,
allegedly, that's what we understand. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, so he's getting snack time, as I've called it, And look, I mean, there's certainly plenty of horrendous people behind bars whose family believe full well that they are a horrendous human being who've done horrible things and still support them financially behind bars and put money in the commissary. That's nothing new. That certainly does happen. Not everyone completely cuts that off. I think sometimes people do that for themselves more than they're actually doing it for them out of guilt or whatever might be going on in their mind. What I'm wondering about is, again, this is all pure conjecture here. I'm wondering if Brian's cognitive distortions of reality, which we know are many, if he is distorting this idea that because mom is giving him money for snack time every week, that is somehow supporting his innocence. I don't know. I mean, they probably have conversations and stuff. I have no idea. But I'm wondering if that is the sign and that's what fuels him to think my family is behind me because they're giving me money for Snickers. I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
Sure could be that he you know, misinterprets reality and comes up with his own story. And it's very comforting to have this sense of attachment, you mm-hmm. know, to mom and dad. But my guess is, just based upon what we know at this point, is that they at least are entertaining doubts that he is guilty. And that's, you know, their way of coping with it, as mm-hmm. somebody put in the comments and what you just said, Tony, how parents can handle horrendous guilt is just moving into denial. And I think whenever a parent has a kid who does something criminal or does something terrible, most parents blame themselves. And in this case, yes, I don't think he was abused as a child. I think he was, you know, from everything we know, well-parented. These were decent people. But something came out wrong in the wiring, which I think for a lot of these people, they're just wired wrong from the beginning. And this may be their way of coping with it, is, you know, to try and reframe things that, you know, their kids simply could not have done it.
And there's also another way to think of the commissary money, too. Stuff I watch on TikTok is horrendous sometimes. You know, people behind bars. I watch all these things on Netflix, documentaries, plus interviews myself. You know, so this so let's, for conjecture's sake, say it's $150 a week. The likelihood and probability, given what we've heard his conditions are like with the torment from the other prisoners behind bars, there's a large probability that $150 isn't going for Snickers for him. It's going to keep people away from him.
But he's in solitary, though. So, I mean, it's not...
Yes-ish, but it's still going to pay off the people around him to keep them silent at night, maybe not from pissing in his food. I mean, in other words, it could be given to him to use as currency for a level of security and safety and peace of mind as well. I'm saying there's a lot of ways that people use commissary in prison system. And it might not just be to serve him, because I can't imagine how much... You know, especially being the freakish eater he is, and picky eater, that it can be used for anything. You're going to buy in commissary for that. But I could see it being, because I've seen it in other many other cases where it's being used to purchase things to give the prisoners around you or send to them to keep them from basically killing him or torturing him unendlessly at night. And so you can imagine, so again, reversing it, as abhorrent as I thought my kid might be, am I going to send him money to keep him at least alive if he's telling me I'm under threat of violence, I'm under threat of these things behind bars? So again, there's a lot of, there could be that as well, is all I'm saying.
Yeah,
the motivation really might not be, it might not be Snickers as the motivation, right. at least in the...
But it is a tool.
Yeah, and not in the sense of it from the candy bar.
Which makes me feel even better. because the way my mind was working on this one, because I remember just watching the Gonsalveses, thinking while they're giving their impact statements about what they're going to be doing to fueling the commissaries of those people around him, all I'm thinking is that that his mother's trying to balance the wheel on the other side. Because so if you are unlucky enough to be in prison to begin with because you made some horrendous choices in life and you found yourself in the same cell block with Brian Koberger, at this point in life you're thinking, man, we got a lot of commissary coming in from all angles because this guy's a complete nutter.
I mean, if obviously Koberger, he's getting money from people other than his parents. There's pro-burgers that are sending him money, yes. And a good percentage of that goes back to pay the fines and stuff, I guess.
Yep.
But there is a percentage he does get for commissary. But it means more when it's coming from mom, if you will. Siobhan, if mom simply said, you know what, I'm done. I don't want my name on the record here of giving this money. You really went out of turn here and threw us into this mix again. I'm not giving you more money. What happens to Brian Koberger behind bars mentally when if mom or I don't know if she's supporting him mentally or if this is just the conjecture of Koberger, but let's for a moment say that she is and she cuts it off and everybody familial cuts it off. No dad, no mom, no sisters, nobody. What happens to him mentally?
I think it would be a big blow because he's clearly been relying on that attachment, particularly to mom, as a coping mechanism, you know, to try to regulate his emotions. So he would probably suffer more psychologically. But certainly, I think for the family, that would be a healthy thing to do, is disconnect more.
I think we'd see him right into his dog more.
Yeah, probably. So if the family's sitting there and you know, you hear this, you know, from families of people who do horrific things like, you know, this is horrible. I feel horrible. I wish there was more I could do. Here's what you can do, Mary. Stop feeding him.
Yeah.
The state will feed him. He's not going to starve to death. The rest of the world he has so bravely marched into through the valley of the shadow of death, using his, you know, biblical large word, you know, dramatic phrasing. And he shall suffer or he shall perish and have eternal life. Whatever the fuck he's going to do. Stop doing it. Stop feeding him. If you want to truly help, here's your one chance you can. You already birthed the monster. You already did whatever that allowed him to get this far. Let's stop. Let's just say stop at this point. And that can be your good deed for life, that everyone doesn't look back upon you for the rest of your life as simply being the mom of Brian Koberger. How about being the mom who cut off Brian Koberger? Okay. That might be the end legacy that you could live with and others could too.
That's a good one.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We look forward to continuing the conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts as well. We do greatly appreciate it. Siobhan's latest book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Also, The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever you get books. Go check it out. And Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me, right here. I got a library on the desk. You can get it wherever you get books, audiobooks as well. Leave a review on Amazon. Greatly appreciated. All right. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon. Peace.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.